Yes.
Where our co-hosts, Judy McGord, Robin Hamilton, and Betty Priu, three queer weird sisters Shakespeare could not have foreseen, present an all-ages tour of what it's like to be gay and gray in these interesting times. For today's episode, September 29th, 2025, Robin Elise Hamilton, a dear friend and able partner at Out on the Edge, returns to share part two of her story. We look forward to hearing more of your unique journey, Robin. First, a shout out to our host, WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carborough at 103.5 FM. We're brought to you by the Orange County, North Carolina Department on Aging. We are deeply grateful for their guidance and support. You can listen to the show live at 103.5 FM or stream it live at WCOMFM.org, Monday afternoons, 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern. Archived shows can be found on the Orange County Department on Aging website at www.orangecountync.gov/OOTE. You'll also find a wide range of resources and services available through the Orange County, North Carolina Department on Aging. We honor that the town of Carborough and surrounding land was originally part of the Saponi people's territory, which also included the Eno, Tutelo, and Shikori Nation. And off to you, Betty.
Great. Thank you, Judy. Again, our guest today is Robin Elise Hamilton. I love that Frenchy kind of name, Elise, one of this show's three co-hosts. And it may not be French, you can tell me at some point. Robin agreed to sit for a second show so we can discuss the many questions we couldn't get to during the first show. So, Robin, thank you for doing this. And before we move forward with the second show, I'd like to summarize a few of the things we learned from you during that first show on the September 22nd. We talked about you growing up in Mississippi, your allyship over the years with black friends and queer friends. That was really powerful, especially with your Mississippi youth. Yeah. How you came to realize that you were trans yourself, and how coming out went for you and your spouse, family, and friends. Those were really big topics, and I'm not surprised that was the bulk of the show.
Available in our archive library.
Yes. On the Department on Aging website, Orange County, North Carolina. And we did start talking about your transition starting at age 70 into the woman you are today. And this beautiful woman sitting across from me. So that's kind of a really brief recap of what we got to last time. I'm wondering, Robin, though, is there anything else you want to mention to kind of help set context before we jump into the next questions?
That's a very open-ended question. It's very dangerous for me.
And it can't be long.
No, I just a point that I wanted to make is several points, but the one I will think is a good jumping-off point is when we were talking last week and we were starting to run out of time, I rattled off a whole lot of the list of steps of the transition, which we wanted to go into a little bit more detail. But I ended very much with a blah, 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 passport and cut off. And I just wanted to, like, say again, Betty, thank you very much for taking me to the Carborough Post Office this afternoon and getting my passport application in about an hour and a half ago.
Welcome.
So it was very important to me. And we can go back into any of the steps that you want to, but I set myself an entirely arbitrary deadline of trying to get Robin established medically, legally, socially, and all points as much as possible by November 5th, 2025.
A few months, about a month or so from now.
A month from now. And the only thing left, the passport is the last legal ID thing. And I'm going in day after tomorrow for the rest of my medical transition procedures.
Okay.
Well, so I will actually make that 1 year deadline from the, quote, election, unquote, of 2024.
Right, and then 2 years from the time period you actually made a decision to start transitioning.
Right, physically. I started HRT in October of 2023.
Okay.
And then started the legal process in November of 2024.
Okay. Basically. So a year ago. So yeah, since we're talking about passport, why don't we talk a little bit about all the legal things you had to change?
Absolutely.
We talked a little bit about that in the car.
Yeah.
Wills, powers of attorney, passport, yeah. Marriage documents. Any of that you want to?
All of that. All of it sort of hinged on getting my name changed.
Oh, didn't realize that.
Once I did that, then I could go get my driver's license updated.
Hadn't even thought of that.
And my Social Security card, because at that time, prior to January 20th, 2025.
Get closer.
I could, oh my God, I have to hit the happy distance between spitting into the mic and speaking loudly enough that you can hear me. Anyway, and Judy was my chauffeur to do my driver's license and my Social Security card, just because it worked out that way.
Neat.
Yeah, no, it did.
We're your chauffeur team.
It just worked out because I was so used to going everywhere on buses because I no longer drive. I started to get panic attacks at the idea of driving because I wasn't doing it much. So, but COVID shut down access to public transportation, and I can't always ask my wife to take me everywhere. So
right.
My friends, anyway, I went, as soon as I had the legal name in my hand, I went to the DMV and found out this is important bit of something for our listeners. None of the how to update your driver's license in North Carolina, and none of the places where I looked on how to change your gender identification on your North Carolina driver's license mentioned that when they do the name check has to match your Social Security name. In other words, you have to get your name updated at Social Security before you can update it at the driver's license, the DMV, and that's where I went first.
Wow.
And so then we immediately, Judy had kept the motor running, we immediately hopped out and we ran over to the Social Security office, and they did what they could, and it looked like everything was fine until a week later when I got the paperwork and looked at it from the Social Security office, and for some reason, they had my old name. The prior records, everything, had me being born in 1888.
Oh, no, you're not that old.
Strange name and strange parents' names and everything. And the only thing I could think of is I got my Social Security number when I was 13 in Mississippi, 1960 something. And that would have been right when that person died. So I think they transferred my number from there to there. And so when the computer, that took another week to go back and get squared away.
But that's really a big legal screw up on
their part. Because I kept going, because I went back, I got that squared away. I went back to the DMV and we did the photo. We changed everything. I had a wonderful clerk, really helped me, told me I could come in anytime, see her, blah, 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 blah. We went through everything up to the very end, and they were running the name check against Social Security, and it didn't clear. And it was a matter of time. Said, we have to wait. It usually takes like a week or something like that. I said, oh, now they tell me. So I came back in a week. And it still wasn't going through and still wasn't going through. And I'm just like, because by that point, the executive order about, all the stuff from the White House about gender and biology and all that, all the lies started being out there. And I was just like panicking. So, again, a very courteous clerk at the DMV called her supervisor over, and they basically just kept hitting refresh, 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 refresh to get the Social Security to clear, and finally said, okay, now it went through.
I documented computer use for like 40 years. It's I can't even... I have no words for how odd and bizarre this sounds.
That was fast, actually, because then I had my Social Security, because I went back again. I think it took three trips to Social Security and three trips to the DMV to get the two cards. And I finally got my when I went to Social Security, Anna Marie took me that time, because I went in and said, here, look at what you said I used to be. Mm-hmm. And the clerk went, oh, that doesn't look right. And so she sat down and she was trying to figure out, and she went, hey, and she turned and she waved a claw gig over, and I suddenly had two agents from the Social Security office looking at the computer and looking at the paperwork it had given me, shaking their heads, trying to figure out what the expression you just had on your face.
Yeah, complete bafflement as to why this would work.
So finally they then gave me completely corrected paperwork, Robin Elise Hamilton, female, with all the former stuff and everything, and the driver's license, and it all took 2 or 3 weeks.
All of this, I'm thinking, it sounds like a month.
The back and forth, back and forth.
Right.
Once I had Social Security, and I'm there, I said, do I have to update Medicare, or will that happen automatically? Oh, that will happen in about 2 weeks.
So you have to wait and monitor. And did it happen in 2 weeks?
It took 3 months.
Oh, geez. Did you have to also do more, or did you just...
No, there wasn't anything I could do except continually call Medicare and say, has it gone through yet? I mean, I would set up an online account, and I would go in, and I would check, and it's the old name, old name, and I would call them. And finally, I called somebody and said, it's been 3 months, and she again, very curious, said, let's fix this now. And she went in and did whatever, hit refresh, whatever. She was able to fix it. And so once, this was now March, because I started that in, sometime in March, or maybe even later. But anyway, that was when I could then start going around and updating my name and gender with all of my insurance carriers.
Okay, so basically it took you four months, it sounds like, to change Social Security and your driver's license, and then
Medicare, and then my insurance carriers. I lucked out. There was a small window between the name change and the incoming administration where I was able to update my name and gender at my TSA account.
Okay.
Just I called them and they said,
like the pre-check stuff.
We need, yes. And they said, we need a copy of your legal name change, which I had.
Mm-hmm.
The gender change, we'll change that. It's done. Which used to be the same thing with Social Security. You could call up Social Security and say, change that, please. And they said, okay, it's done. You can't do that anymore. Can't do that anymore with TSA. There was a whole web page about updating your gender on the TSA website that was gone on January 21st. Because I was monitoring that.
Yeah, that's
stuff like that. So
one repercussion of what's coming out of the current administration.
That's one thing. So
one very detrimental repercussion. Okay.
So eventually, and just for people who know your frequent flyer card, things like that, your ID on your frequent flyer card is going to have to match your TSA ID too. And that takes sending them copies of your name and your driver's license, and then they process. And by the time I finally got that squared away, that was another, that was a midsummer at this point, in the middle of the summer. So
good 6 months.
So that's all that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And concurrently, I went into UNC and updated my... Because I retired rather than resigned, I'm still an affiliate at UNC, so I can go back. I can be invited back to teach classes and stuff like that. I'm going to be going to Wilmington sometime in November to co-teach a class for my friend Michael at UNCW. So that's kind of thing. So I still get email and have blah 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 blah. So I went in to update that, and that took a week or so, because they had to have the driver's license and and all that kind of thing. So, and the taxes were all happening at that point, and I told our accountant, I said, for beginning the tax year 2025, I'm going to have a new name. And we followed everything last year, because it's my current name now. So I actually filed all of my taxes for 2024 as Robin Elise.
Okay.
So that was there. And that was at the same time. And this is in January where this is happening with driver's license and Social Security happening and TSA and the name and IRS. And that's when we called our lawyers and updated durable power of attorney and the medical power of attorney.
Okay.
Right then, immediately.
Did you have to have some of these legal documents before you could change the stuff with your attorney, like the wills
attorney? No, they needed the name change.
Okay.
The rest of it was fine. But to back up the driver's license, because I forgot, one of the things I needed from the driver's for the DMV was a letter from one of my medical teams attesting that I was indeed transgender. I was undergoing treatment for transgender, and I was legally my declared sex and no longer my natal sex. So that was just a form thing, which I had, I was thick with those, because I also needed those forms to schedule any sort of gender-affirming surgery.
Right. So that was from your medical team, with whom you had worked with for quite a while, I would imagine. So, like, you can't just say, oh, I'm transgender, and change everything everywhere all at once.
No, absolutely not. That's one of the things. I mean, I had to.
It's one of the myths.
So many myths.
Yes.
No, I was not allowed to start hormone therapy until I had been seeing a therapist for months, enough time for him to sign off on me as being transgender, suffering from gender dysphoria, and needing medical attention for that. And it's the same thing with my endocrinologist and my therapist had to present to my urologist that I was a candidate for gender-affirming surgery because I have gender dysphoria and I need that and blah, 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 blah. So.
Okay. Well, so that kind of segues into the, physical transitions, things like hormones. You talked a little bit about when you got those hormone surgery, voice coach, electrolysis. I mean, have you done any of?
Well, all of the above.
Really? Okay.
I know. I was on hormone therapy consisted of estrogen, and given my age and I had a heart attack when I was 46, and so that sort of screws up my blood work, and they have to be very careful. I have to also, besides the endocrinologist and therapist saying I need the surgery was not going to happen until I got an okay from my cardiologist.
Okay.
So there was all sorts of these things to do, which is not, again, it's unique to me because I have a heart attack, but it is not unique to people my age transitioning to expect that they would need to have
other preconditions taken into consideration.
Right.
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
Thank goodness.
So, and I thought the stress test was going to kill me right there in the cardiologist's office, but phew. But I
passed, had doctors there. So.
Or so they said. They all look like they were 12 or 13 now. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed that when we go to the doctors these days, they all look like Doogie Howser?
Oh, yeah.
They look like Doogie Howser's
younger siblings. Been saying that for a few decades now.
So, no, there is no immediate, with an ethical medical practitioner, there is no immediate, hi, I'm trans, can I have my boobs cut off?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that just doesn't happen. And yet that's the whole mutilation, they're attacking the children thing. That's just, the goop that the anti-trans people put on their spear.
The scare tactic.
Yeah. That's all it is. And if you go back and look at the history of civil rights in the United States and go even further back and you look at the blood libel stuff from the way the Jews have been persecuted throughout history, but particularly in the 30s in Germany, they were attacking Gentile children. They needed blood of Gentile children and their Kabbalistic sacrifices, and says it saved the children, save the children, save the children, save the children. Queer people in the 80s, they're recruiting, save the children, save the children.
Yeah.
That's all they think of and stuff like that. So, but in terms of transitioning, you can't do that. It's mm-hmm. not done. It's just, and the overriding thing, which I think I might touch on, is trans people have, we have no choice about being trans. Mm-hmm. We do not decide to be trans. Nobody makes us trans. We have, I'm going to be graphic here for a second. We have about as much choice about being trans as a garden gnome has about whether the squirrels or the birds are going to poop on it. That's how much choice we have in being trans. Both of you being mm-hmm. cisgender, that's how much choice you have in being cisgender. It's not a choice. So
right.
The fact that they say, oh, a man puts on a dress and all of a sudden he says he's a woman. No, that's not it. It's infuriating, but I'm going to shut up now.
No, that's good. You touched on a lot of things we needed to know, really. So, I mean, the pragmatic things are things like voice coach and all that.
I have been working with a voice coach. You can't really tell because I've been, and I thought at the time that working on the show would really be a really good chance for me to play with voice placement and inflection and rising and patron and everything like that mm-hmm. and get a little bit more breath and everything and stuff like that. But it's like, okay, are the mics on? Have we checked the mic? What time does the show start? Who's doing what?
It'll come.
I know, but seriously, thinking about how my voice sounds going out over the air right now is the last thing on my mind until
Sitting
we get
here.
Some more shows mm-hmm. under our belts. And it's like, okay, how close? Am I too close to the mic? Is this too close to the mic? Oh, wait, no, am I back up here?
Yeah.
There's just all this other. But I have an excellent voice coach. She also does a program in the aging voice. She's also a member of the LGBTQ community.
Mm-hmm.
We are negotiating a slot for me to interview her for our show.
It sounds like it'd
probably
be a fascinating
be in November
show.
Or is it, yeah, mm-hmm. something like that. And she keeps, I see her monthly for refreshments and refreshments for refreshing. she's just wonderful. And it's just like great. But again, I just haven't really found, this is going to be a wonderful place to practice, but I just haven't gotten there yet.
Makes sense.
But that's part of it. I haven't really started feminizing my wardrobe very much because two things that nobody told me when I started transitioning was that being this age means my second puberty, all those secondary sex characteristics that happen when puberty happens, mm-hmm. they're going to be a lot slower when you're my age.
Right.
So I am skipping completely the teenage succubus jailbait sex queen. I'm going directly to Baba Yaga without passing go, and that's fine. It's fine. It's like that. Just as the physical change in my body are very slow.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that they say that your boy fat will turn into girl fat, which is the different parts of the body. Boys,
it relocates some.
Yeah. Women carry the weight. To carry the fat layers more on the hips and the butt and lower on the belly, whereas men tend to, for some peculiar prehistoric reason, evolve to all their fat layers are directly around their central organs. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you get beer bellies on men. And that's why I had one, even though I never drank beer, but that's just where all my fat went. And I was thinking, oh, okay, well, all that fat's just going to, like, move down, and it'll be on my butt, and I'll be really happy. But
mm-hmm.
no, you lose the boy fat, mm-hmm. and you gain girl fat. It doesn't move. It's there. So it's a longer process to lose the old fat deposits,
okay.
which I've been working on, and a longer process to build up the new fat deposits. So
yeah.
it's happening, but I don't really have a body that looks particularly one way or the other right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite as much a beach ball anymore, but it's really not much more than, you know, a burrito.
Okay.
I kind of have a burrito body. And
okay. Well, you know, so you've been going through transitions of different types for about 2 years, and you're making me think with this conversation that we maybe ought to have you on again about a year from now to see where things are, how you're feeling about what's going on then.
Yeah. No, that's I have no problem. Ed, have me on as a guest, because I probably will still be co-hosting by that
point. You will. Right. Have you on as a guest. You will be co-hosting. And so I'm going to kind of redirect us right now to...
Absolutely.
Okay, and thank you for all this detailed information. This is, I think, very valuable to people who will hear this in the future
thank you.
So
I hope so.
Yeah, and I'm think so. My feeling... 2 years of this, it's like, shoosh. Like, what do you do to take a break from all this, all the trance, all the time? Because it sounds exhausting.
It's absolutely exhausting. And one of the things that I have found is that as I come to the end of my self-imposed, highly stressful punch list this year since the election with I have the passport application in. There's nothing legal for me to do anymore like that.
So that stress is diminishing quite a bit.
Well, I don't have a target anymore. What I'm finding out is that it's not exactly adrenaline, but all the adrenaline, everything that I've been pushing so hard for the past 12 months, I suddenly have nothing to push against now. The surgery is scheduled. It's just a done thing. Boom, boom, boom. And that's after that, it's like just settle down and let the estrogen do what it's going to do, whatever it's going to do, you know, and that's going to be fine with me. I'm not planning on any cosmetic surgery to change the shape of my body or anything like that. That's what's going to be. The root visual thing. I wanted to get rid of that, and so.
Say
it again.
What do you do to relax, to find some peace
We have been saving, and this is very hard. We've been saving the last four episodes of Wednesday to watch what I'm recovering, and we have been putting off Only Murders in the Building until then, too.
Oh, you're going to have such fun. I've seen both of those.
Yeah. We just can't wait. And it was like, wait, why aren't we watching? Well, I thought we should wait till you start recovering. Oh, okay. Yeah, because, we've been saving that. That things that my wife and I learned enjoy doing together, you know, we like to watch things on TV. We found a... there's a cabaret in New York that's been doing a lot of live streaming all of a sudden. And so...
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, Below 54 is just... And it's like they... we actually saw a live show there. Anna Marie's vocal teacher performed there several years ago, one of our last trips together to New York. But they've been live streaming. And actually this past weekend, we saw Ann Hampton Calloway perform. And then the next thing you know, she's performing in Durham in November 1st. And so we're actually going to go see her live. The last thing we saw live was Betty Buckley's Hello Dolly tour, because that was right before COVID hit and everything like that. And we've given our age, given a lot of comorbidities and things like that, we really don't go out much at all. So we entertain ourselves. And when she's busy, I write. So as I think I mentioned... I had my first chapbook published this year, came out this summer, and I can now talk about that openly because I finally, you know, my wife had her birthday and I gave her copy, so I can talk about that. I have a full collection that I am waiting to hear back from at some point. I mean, I submitted it. It was an open call. It wasn't solicited, but I sent that out to a publisher. I just had a poem included in an anthology that just came out that Judy just got her copy of, from Gnashing Teeth Publishing. I am sending a chapbook submission to Gnashing Teeth by the end of the year, and I just got a note that a publisher called Rough Diamond has a new book that... another 50 hours or something is going to be available online called 100 Poems for the 21st Century. And I have two of them.
Congratulations.
That's coming out. So that's what I've been doing. I actually started writing when I was in high school. I thought it would get me dates. It never did. But nothing got me dates in high school. I just, looking like Leonard Whiting did not get me dates in high school. So that's what they told me. You look like Leonard Whiting. Uh-huh. Do you like to go out with me? No. So
you're kind of picking back up something you did a long time ago.
That's the point I wanted to make, is that I'm... when COVID hit and my retirement hit, I was no longer doing theater 70, 80 hours a week, which we now know was a way for me to stay in the closet, because mm-hmm. I would just say, oh, I can't think about that now. I'm too busy getting a show open.
Right.
And all of a sudden, boom, I'm not doing that. So I went back to starting the writing, and I actually started looking, because of COVID, there was so much more online engagement. There was, you could submit things online. You could do workshops online. As right. I said before, Mac and I were in a playwriting workshop online. That was just phenomenal. That was incredible. And I wish they were still doing it. But this, all of a sudden, things shifted, and I could start writing. And then one day I went, oh, well, I'll send something in. And I got something picked. And I was just like, what?
That's great.
So and it's just so I don't mm-hmm. I do very little. I don't do much. I'll send out maybe a dozen pieces a year, maybe, because it's just it's something that I enjoy doing, mm-hmm. and I enjoy the wordsmithing. Judy and I have exchanged things before. We're both writing poems or dialogues. I'm like, oh, try this, try that. She's introduced me to a great many different forms of poetry, the structures mm-hmm. of things like
yeah.
that. And I enjoy all of that. And
crafting words.
Yeah.
It's
fun. And if I'm not writing a poem, I'm writing a 10-minute play. Because mm-hmm. again, Mac and I were part of a local 10-minute play group, and Judy has read them. She stage managed them.
So this is cool.
Yeah. And
good. I want to go to one next time
I go back and forth between a script, usually with puppets, i.e. totally mm-hmm. unstageable.
Okay.
Or poetry.
So your creative juices are really flowing in terms of writing and with all the work. With all the work that you did with performing, in plays in that area.
Yeah.
So that's an easy thing, not easy, but you think in that way for some of your work in terms of play performance.
A lot of things. Yeah. I have at least 6 plays in progress that I've been working on off and on for years, because they're all musicals, so that they're all really hard to finish. But I also have at least 3 books of full collections of poetry that I'm mm-hmm. working on, because I'm going to make them illustrated. And nobody does illustrated poetry for the most. So I'm probably going to have to do self-publishing, which we mm-hmm. will soon be talking to my friend Janet Chandler, who is a self-published poetry, about the self-publishing.
I like that.
As an outlet for when we're talking about memoir and creating our personal histories and everything.
That's great.
That needs to be an outlet, and so that's why I solicited Janet to come in and talk to us.
I think that's powerful. So it sounds like writing occupies a lot of your, creative juices going forward.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you have a nice life with your wife. So, streaming wonderful TV programs and just hanging out like each other. So I'm going to turn it over to Judy for an announcement.
And now, don't touch that dial.
This is a message from our sponsors. Before the message, I wanted to remind you all that this is an election year. It may not seem like an election year because it's kind of quiet election. Please make sure your voter registration is in place. Every one of us need to make sure. Every election counts. Please do that. So now for a message from our sponsors. Come join us to celebrate National Coming Out Day at our free picnic with Pride. Mark your calendars and save the date. Saturday, October 4th, noon to 3 at Blackwood Farm Park on North Carolina 86 between Chapel Hill and Hillsborough. It will be a joyful afternoon of community connection and courage. Bring your friends, your blanket, and your most authentic self for a colorful picnic filled with food, fun, and pride. Whether you're out, coming out, or supporting someone on their journey, This is a space for everyone to feel seen, safe, and celebrated. Main dishes will be provided. Bring your favorite side dish to share. Let's come together out loud and proud. Your story matters, and your presence is powerful. It's sponsored by the Carolina Aging Alliance, AARP, and the UNC LGBTQ Center. Hosted by the Project Engage LGBTQ Plus Senior Resource Team, who also brings this radio station show to you. Mm-hmm. A link for the register for the potluck is orangecountync.gov/picnicwithpride. To register for the event, call 919-968-2070. Remember, Saturday, October 4th, noon to 3 at Blackwood Farm Park. We'll see you there. And back to Betty and Robin.
Okay, let's crack into
it. Actually, I wanted to follow up on that and say, because I skipped it, changing my voter ID was one of the first things I did once I had the name changed.
Yay.
So that's, and that was, you can do it online. You can call them up. It was very easy. It took a couple of minutes and mm-hmm. boom, I got my new voter ID card.
I would imagine after driver's license.
No, actually, that was part of the process. It didn't.
Nice.
Because they will check your records in the Board of Elections, mm-hmm. you know, everything, my ID was the same. I was simply changing my name, and gender is an option, and I went ahead and updated that as well.
Okay. So, good. So many legal documents.
Yeah, but that's one of the reasons we want to start talking about voting now, so people can make sure they're on the mm-hmm. rolls and they haven't been erased.
Makes perfect sense. Good, good, good. So, you talked a little bit about advantages and things that were going on in your transition that are kind of different because you started so late at age 70, like the hormones operating more slowly. Yeah. Are there other advantages or disadvantages you'd like to share about starting a transition at this point in life?
Some of the obvious ones that they weren't conscious, but one of the things about transitioning at my age is my parents have already passed away, so I never had to come out to my parents. Mm-hmm. I was retired, so I didn't have to come out at work. I don't have a huge network of friends or social media and everything just because of the way I was, so I didn't have a whole lot of that to come out. As we talked, I know we talked about coming out to my wife was the hardest, and then coming out to my siblings was almost as hard. After that, Mac and Michael, my best friends, and everything else is like, mm-hmm. Big deal. So there was a lot of stressors that people younger who are still in the workforce, who still live at home or are still close with their parents or their grandparents mm-hmm. around. I mean, there's the stories that I know with friends of mine who are transitioning who have been ostracized by their family. And so I didn't have to go through any of that. And I own property. You know, I'm not struggling in a job to pay
rent.
So
you're established and you're really financially independent, you know.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in the sense that you don't have to have a job to maintain your life, right?
Right. No, that's – I'm established is probably the best word for it. Mm-hmm. I don't – there are a lot of the hurdles about maintaining a financially recompensed existence out in a capitalistic society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have, I know. I just like, it just comes out sometimes. I'm not a wage slave. You know, I write because I enjoy it. If I'm compensated for it, that goes, you know, a charity mm-hmm. that I will give thanks to. Everything. I'm comfortable. I'm in a much better place financially. Just the stability that I have achieved, not by myself, but anyway, that is something a lot of younger people don't have.
Yeah, and so it gives you the freedom.
Yeah, so there's a lot.
Yeah.
The downside, of course, is that I am not looking forward to, realistically, but who knows, I'm not looking forward to spending another 60 years as a woman to balance the 60 years I spent as a man.
Yeah.
That's a little trickier. And again, that whole teenage succubus dalebate thing, I'm not going to go out and dye my hair blue or, you know, make
although
really,
I think you could rock that. I think it would work.
I still make really horrible fashion choices, but not ones that there's like, you know, there's a whole teen girl thing that I'm just... Anyway, so I miss that. I miss the youth. But I want to make very, very clear, I do not regret waiting until coming out when I did. I personally, one of the coping things is I've never accepted regret as a valid anything for any reason or anything like that. It's just, literally, there is a line from King and I that my wife pointed out to me because she's played Anna. Now is always best time. And it sounds sort of glib. It sounds sort of like, you know, well, let's go do this. And boom, boom, boom. And, you know, it really ties in with a lot of Eastern philosophy that I've studied over the years and everything. And it just makes sense. Everything. This is what I'm doing now, and so this is what I'm supposed to be doing now. There's no reason for me to think I could have done it in the past. I can't. I mean, that's like going outside and yelling at the rain.
Right.
Stop raining! I know, like
the Buddhist notion, you have 5 minutes for regret. That's it. Then stop. Yeah. And some philosophies talk about how now is the only time. Really.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it makes sense to me.
The past is gone. The future hasn't happened. And now is all there is.
And you took the path that created the Robin who's sitting here today.
Yeah.
And what a path. A lot of wonderful things happened.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's cool. Thanks for all that. Now, you have brought up wanting to talk about what you discovered in yourself as your asexuality. I think you really wanted to talk a bit about that. And, you know, these days, especially talking with the younger folks that we've talked with, it's not only sexual orientation and gender are separate, but the way you express your sexuality and how you feel about your sexuality is also a lot more diverse these days.
Right. And it's a lot more fluid, too.
Right. That makes sense.
I've never been sexually attracted to men. And that, the older I get and the more I think about that and everything, I'm not as sexually attracted to men. And they can be cis men. They can be trans men.
And you said this in the previous interview that, you know, that was one of the requirements for being transgender earlier.
Right. Yeah,
by the medical
a lot
community.
Of gatekeeping is you have to be heterosexual after the surgery or you're not going to be getting the surgery.
I attracted to men, and that wasn't happening for you.
Yeah, no, and it's just, and I mean, I was... without getting too graphic, I was sexually assaulted when I was a teen by a man, and then I was 6 years later I was sexually assaulted by a woman, and so it's not like my aversion to them is not homophobic. You know, most of my best friends growing up and my colleagues at work for years, you know, I work in a very LGBTQ-friendly business in the theater and tech theater and. Directors, I mean, I have gay men, lesbians, they're all, you know, we're best friends, you know, that's not it. It's just I'm not sexually turned on by male parts, including my own. And I was always very attracted to women and trans women or cis women, I've learned. But the asexuality is something separate. And basically that came about because I realized I was no longer having to pretend to be a heterosexual man. And once I did that, it's like, oh, I really don't have much interest in coitus, I guess, is, you know, the physical act of that.
The missionary position, the standard man-woman,
split flying cowgirl, whatever you want to call it, you know, those things like that. And so I started looking at that, and it's like, oh, and it really is, as I think I might have mentioned, had I been born now rather than in the 50s, I probably would have sort of realized I'm more non-binary than I am male or female, man or woman as I present, because it's I kid about this sometimes, because again, the stereotype is that trans women are all super feminine, and we spend all day dressing up and putting on makeup and looking and taking selfies and dancing in front of a mirror and all that stuff. And it's like, I have, one of the things I have not done since I started transition is I tried on a dress, I think maybe three times, looked at myself in the mirror and said, nope. I would like to try them to find out if I like them, you know, because I like them on other women, and maybe I will like them on me. But I am probably going to be the most butch trans woman that people are going to know, you know, because I almost put my eye out trying to play with an eyelash curler this morning before my passport photo. Well, it's like, so
I know a lot of lesbians who will welcome you. Yeah. You can be the most lesbian trans woman you've ever seen.
Because
who, I haven't bought makeup in, I can't even remember. And,
that is one of the things that I share with people who transition earlier, is that we're getting to explore how we identify, how we present to the world. You know, do I look femme? Do I look neutral? Do I look butch? You know, how much makeup is makeup? What do I look like with eye makeup? I don't know yet, and I will try to find that out and everything like that.
You can play with it. It melts into your eyes, and it feels very uncomfortable. So better now.
But I'm exploring that. But it's the same thing. Is it gets back to the sexual orientation, which. Everyone is always assumed to be fixed, and that's why there's an awful lot of biphobia still out there, is people saying,
I agree,
you can't be bi, you just haven't made up your mind.
You have to choose.
You just haven't met the right man yet. You haven't met the right woman yet. And it's like, no. So and then you say, well, maybe you're pansexual, and people go, what does that even mean? Is it maybe demisexual? How does that fit?
I kind of wonder this.
I mean, there's a whole, and it's like
a whole pantheon.
It's like we talked about the as the human bank of knowledge evolves, and we try to become more specific and more clear in the way we're describing things. We're going to come up with a lot of caca. And clumsy, horrible-sounding words that everybody's going to go, ooh, and it's very off-putting or thing. But yeah, there is a difference between bisexual and pansexual, and bisexual is defined more by the genitals of the person you're attracted to, whereas pansexual doesn't care about the genitals or the gender of the person you're attracted to. And I'm being really glib here. I mean, this is really deep.
It's simple, but
the
yeah.
point is that there are a lot of variations in the term asexual as well. Is that people, the more people hear the term and know about it, the more the same sort of bias as that bisexuals are experiencing. Now, the same thing is happening a lot with asexuals. That doesn't exist. You're just frigid. You never met the right person. You know, you're anorgasmic. And it's like, no. It's like, I am not anorgasmic.
And you would know.
I would know. I would know that quite a bit. There's the again, it's the mechanics of it that I don't appeal to me. There is no bottom line. I'm not saying this is the way it is. You know, it's part of the transition.
Right.
Is like getting rid of the drive to perform as a heterosexual male. I did not suddenly say, well, now I have to perform sexually as a woman. I don't have to perform sexually at all. What? Boom, head explodes, stuff like that. And there's and within that pantheon of asexuality, there are people who are anorgasmic. They do not like anything like that, and they especially don't. And so they never had, and they ones who are orgasmic. And then the gray sexual is the one that really tries to mess people up, because that is a sliding scale of asexuality. It's like 90% of the time I'm asexual, but all of a sudden, ooh, you turned me on.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Or
I think there's another show in all this, because you know way more about all these definitions than I do.
I'm about to exhaust my body analogies. But asexuality is a spectrum.
Okay.
That's basically it. All sexualities, gender is a spectrum. Mm-hmm. Sexual orientation is a spectrum.
Yeah.
The same way our physical bodies are spectrums.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Gosh, you've had way more information.
Nature abhors a binary.
Well, you know, though, what I think we're hearing is kind of what we were talking earlier about with Judy, is that, you know, we don't feel a strong need right now to identify as gay or trans or lesbian or whatever.
Right,
it's like I identify as Judy. I identify as Betty. And the more I talk with you guys,
I'm Robin.
You're Robin, and it's you're the conglomeration of all the things you feel in the moment.
Absolutely.
So there's that. And I see we're all looking at the clock. It's 50 minutes of the hour. I may or may not stop us on the hour, and I'm just being fully transparent with the world about this. Technically, we have an hour, but
that's because you and I do the editing if we go over. So
You know, and we'll do the call, the station call after. So that counts for the top of the hour.
I'm not looking at the clock.
Don't look at the clock, because I have only a few more questions, but I'd like us to be able to do this, because you've been thinking about these things a long time.
Yeah, no, just keep me on track. Don't let me wander.
That's okay, because I'm being really selfish. I want to keep going, so we're going to keep going. Okay, fine. Okay, cool. You talked a little bit at one point about, or at least when we were talking away from here, about the bogus idea that being trans is a choice, a whimsy, an ideology, which a lot of, you know, there are a lot of people who are pushing anti-trans minors, you know, people who have no money and no political power. It's like, let's scapegoat the least among us, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But that people are pushing really hard. They're creating an ideology of anti-trans.
Absolutely.
So that's what I'm wondering. Yeah. I'd like to hear a little more about what you think about this bogus idea that gives us an idea of what you think about it. But, elaborate.
Right. Well, I talked earlier about it not being a choice, so I don't need to do that. But there is, I just, coincidentally over the weekend, I just read an article about how much money into anti-trans groups, Alliance Defending Freedom, so many in the UK and everything. A lot of their funding is coming from big oil. Shell, in particular, is putting a lot of money into anti-trans groups, because there's so much noise about, you know, mutilating children and, you know, blah, 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 and men and women's sports and, you know, apex sexual predators and women's bathrooms and stuff like that. Nobody's paying any attention to the way environmental protections are being
destroyed,
and knocked down and taken apart, and that kind of thing. That, and it was one of those. Oh, it doesn't change much of anything, but it just shows. It really shows me that, as you were just talking about, there is the ideology is on the gender critical side, the anti-trans, because we know, and we talked earlier about the fact that once they can make it legally acceptable to discriminate and erase trans people, they can start then with gay people, and marriage equality is threatened. And my wife and I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what did that do to us legally with our marriage, married as a heterosexual couple, and now being legally a same-sex couple. The marriage is fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. But what happens if a marriage equality is overturned and it does become threatened? It's like, you know, what does that do? Because it's always the low-hanging fruit, you know. And right now, because they can't be as openly racist against blacks, can't be as openly homophobic against mainstream queer people, they can't be as openly anti-Islamic as they were right after 9/11, you know, all of a sudden like that. It's like, Well, who's small and vulnerable and weak?
And who can't fight back?
Who can't fight back? Well, immigrants and gay people.
Yeah.
Boom.
So, and so they create a lot, you know, a lot of people, a lot of groups are creating a lot of noise to distract from the real things that are causing destruction and problems in our world,
I mean, you think people are just, the whole idea of overturning the 19th Amendment is a laugh, but no. That is a primary thing in Project 2025 and the whole Christian nationalist thing.
And which one is the 19th Amendment?
Women's
Make
vote.
Sure.
The right for women to vote.
Oh, God.
Yeah, no, I mean, you would think that was stupid, but no. There are people actually the same people who say that, well, the right to bear arms will be uninfringed. No, that's what shall not be infringed. Unless you're trans. Now, there's a lot of people seriously talking about
pushing that.
Pushing it through the, by calling us mentally ill.
Yeah.
And so they fabricate transgender shooters for all these mass shootings that come up and that are, they're not.
Mm-hmm.
They're not even close and that kind of thing, but they just keep labeling it. And because the way people consume social media and the way social media is put out there and people are, people have discredited the news media, so now people turn to social media because they've been told they're lied to by the networks and things like that, and they've been told they've been lied to by CDC. Yeah. So they've been told anybody who speaks of gender-affirming care, and here are the studies that show puberty blockers are reversible and puberty blockers are temporary, and they provide a much greater, healthier outlook on life for youth who are put on there rather than go through a disastrously wrong puberty. Oh, the big pharma. And they dismiss them all. And just because they have been told repeatedly to not trust anybody except this one sort of orange ferret headed guy.
Right. And unfortunately, you know, if you can, these days with social media, if they get out there's a transgender person who committed this atrocity, even if later on we found out not, if you've heard that first, a lot of times you will just remember what you heard first, whether it's true or not.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So there's, okay. So
That's a big thing.
Yeah. That's
all very much ideological basis. That has no basis in reality.
So unfortunately, what we see again is an instance of, you know, transgender people being accused of something that the anti-trans people are actually doing.
Right.
They're pushing an anti-trans ideology with no basis in fact and no basis in knowing people themselves. So, okay, so this kind of segues into, so what is it like to be this early in your transition in the United States of America in 2025? I think we can infer a lot from some of the things you just said.
I've covered a lot of that, and I don't regret transitioning now.
Mm-hmm.
This is the right time. This is why I'm here. This is the reason I'm here. Part of this show is to get back to my hippie activist roots from the 60s and the 70s. It's like, give a damn. They ain't heavy. They're my sibling. You know, that's to bring it up to date. So that kind of thing. Like that. And it's like, because again, I was, helping Mac with all the stuff that was happening to him. And now it's like, this is, and again, the advantage of having that established life outside of that, it gives me the freedom to say, okay, Monday afternoons, I'm going to get on the radio and we're going to talk about queer people and old people and making a difference.
Yeah.
And that, and that sort of thing. And who knows, what that's going to lead to. But this, again, I'm trying to pay back for the luxury that I have right now, the privilege that I have of being at this point in my life with this free time and this breadth of history, I guess, if you want to, and I want to make a difference.
Well, that's a good reminder to all of us elders about doing that. I was really happy when there was last No King's Day here in Chapel Hill. A lot of white-haired people, you know, and a lot of white-haired white people. And it's important for us to be standing up for what we believe these days.
Yeah.
That's okay. Good, good. You're here.
Give a damn.
Oh, that's great. God. So let's focus a little bit on you. How do you think, or how do you want your life to change as you move beyond the current space you're in your transition? You know, what do you want to create? How do you want your life to be now and moving forward?
No, it's an interesting question, because one of the things I have learned, the biggest part of my transition, I think, as I have mentioned or alluded to, is not the physical transition. It's not the legal hurdles. It's not the social things. It's not the surgical things. It's the unpacking the closet. It's the years and years and years of presenting the way people told me to present, and I assumed that they had my best interests. Mm-hmm. My parents were supposed to love me. They wouldn't lie to me. And so I've been jumping through hoops the whole time, and now that I'm not, I would really like to be able to just explore Robin, just be Robin with Anna Marie.
Nice.
And see what that's like, and not, and I just recently started realizing that nobody has been pushing me to do all of this stuff except me.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has said, you have to have all of this done before the first anniversary of that stupid election, except me. So All the stuff, when I say, I'm so tired, I wish I didn't have to do all this.
You created that.
I created that. I absolutely created that. And it's so good to find out that right as I'm coming to the end of all of that stuff. So because we weren't going to do any of this until we'd had a chance to just sort of be together, see what the estrogen did, that kind of thing, and then make a decision about the legal rest of it. But now that's all done. So now that's all done, and I want to be able to write. I want to work with my wife on creating her next cabaret show.
Wow.
Which I told her, I said, I want to write it, I want to direct it, I want to play bass for it, I want to, you know, costume it and stuff like that. And it's because I won't be spending all of my time going, what's the next step? Have I got that ID? Did I do, wait, what, you know, blah, 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 that, and all that. It's done.
So it sounds like, in terms of how you move in the world, you feel like you might be more free because you have passed this big transition phase. And now, I mean, you're already exploring some of your own creativity, but you'll have time to work with your wife and her own.
I'm looking forward to being free, more honest, more open. But at the same time, it's all really new to me. So it's still scary, but I'm excited about the chance to rebuild it in my own image. How's that?
That's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
That's pretty powerful. So, yeah, I know we're getting close. I know. I'm going to kill you.
I know.
I have one more question. And
it's
then I'll
not
let
my
you
fault.
Go.
It's
and
Herbert.
Then we'll
it's
do not... the station ID as part of our outro, right? We have that.
Yep.
Okay, good, good, good. Okay, after all this wonderful sharing you've done with us for 2 hours plus, I'm wondering what you would tell other folks who may be late in life but feeling really drawn to transition to a different gender, to be different from who they are now, to claim their authentic self. That's what it sounds like you're doing.
I'm sorry, it's a big question. No, it is, and I just want to try and do it intelligently. My experience is that trans people know that we're trans from very, very early. Usually, gender identity has been medically established as happening sometime around 6 or 7. To live to be in your 60s, to be your 70s, and just now thinking about transitioning means that you have really suppressed it. This is where I don't want to get really negative. It's not an actual case. It's something that you are trying to think will be a cure-all. There are most people who are labeled as detransitioners is because I thought I was trans, but then I wasn't. So trans is a scam. I was talked into it. Blah 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 blah. They weren't really trans because trans is not something you decide to do to solve your problems.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I'm a failure as a man. I'm going to become a woman, and I won't be a failure anymore. That's not transgender. That's
right.
Psychopathia or something like mm-hmm. that. And that's what people lump their opinions of trans people do. So if you are my age and you truly feel that you are trans and have been, do everything you can to acknowledge that, to be true to yourself. It's a very tragic experience. A friend of mine who's a little bit younger than me, who's trans, but she has chosen to sacrifice her own trans identity to keep her marriage together.
Mm-hmm.
It gets to be so entrenched when you get to be our age. All those things that are, in my case, have just made it really established and gave me a lot of freedom. A lot of people find that it to be a lot of baggage, and that means they can't.
Mm-hmm.
So be honest with yourself and do everything you can to be as honest with yourself. You can transition at any age.
Great. Robin, thank you. Thank you. It was wonderful talking
thank
with
you. Thank you for your patience.
Oh, gosh. And thank you. And we're going to pretend it's the top of the hour now. Judy, take
mic,
it away.
Judy, move your mic over in front of your face.
Station ID and everything.
Make sure your volume is up.
Robin, I just want to thank you for your story. You know that you may have provided a page in someone's survival guide this afternoon. I want to thank you for that.
Thank you.
We are at WCOMLP in Chapel Hill, Carrboro at 103.5 FM and the Orange County Department on Aging. We thank them for making Out on the Edge a reality. We'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, and we'd love to hear from you. OutOnTheEdgeRadio@gmail.com. Now, here's the favorite part of the show for me. We have an inspirational quote to lift your spirits and maybe inspire you on this particular Monday. And this is a message for Robin from Anais Nin. And the day came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom.
Nice. Very nice.
Thank you for taking care of one another. And we're out.